Beyond Every After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey to Death and the Afterlife. Two special guests, Catherine Weisenberg, Jocelyn Montanaro, and we will talk with them tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me tell you about our first half guest. Catherine Weisenberg has been sharing her very unique abilities to communicate with and dialogue with God, the deceased, patients who are in comas for decades in some cases. Catherine writes that the conversations as they occur, calling them writings, she's very grateful to serve others by facilitating the transmission of spirit, wisdom, healing energy, incorporating the writings from retreat settings. Also, she's created a concept as a love-based approach to living and experiencing reality. Catherine, what do you call that?
Lovality.
Lovality. Did you invent that word?
I received that word, yes. Uh-huh. It's not spirituality or psychology, it's lovality.
Tell me a little bit more about yourself. How did this gift occur for you?
Well, you know, the cosmic joke is I was in graduate school studying communication. So I got an advanced degree that I wasn't expecting, that the university couldn't give me, but the university did.
You got your PhD.
Right, there you go. There you go. So I just started receiving information. And, you know, quite innocently. And it was a crazy ride. You know, I thought I was losing my mind. But I would just hear, like, to go up to strangers and say some innocuous statement. And I'd think, like, the blue car under the trundle bed or something. And I'd be like, oh, they're going to think I'm crazy. But it would be sort of like a kid, say it, say it. So I'd go up and to people sitting in a restaurant or wherever and say, excuse me, and, you know, I'd just say whatever I was going to say, and the people would look at me, and sometimes they'd start crying, and they would, it would resonate with them, and I'd be so embarrassed and shocked, and I'd be like, okay, bye, and that continued to happen, and what I do now and for the last 30 years is much more refined dialogue than a cryptic kind of a message, but yeah, it was pretty it was pretty unique experience.
I bet. How many did not want you around, but maybe thought you were a little nuts?
You know, I have to tell you, I never ever had that experience.
Wow.
The only person who had trouble with it was me. I was the most resistant one.
Really?
And yeah, I never did ever have anyone say what. You know, I'm from the Midwest. I'm 5 foot tall. I don't look threatening, you know. And people just, they were never, I mean, the people who would be sitting with these people, they would look like, what's going on, too? Because they would know, you know, they're in the middle of their soup or whatever, and they couldn't explain it either. But no one ever had an issue with it.
Whereabouts from the Midwest were you from?
I was from St. Louis.
Oh, really? That's where I spend half my time.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I graduated from Collinsville High School, so I was actually from the east side.
From the Illinois side, that's right.
Yeah, from the Illinois side. But, yes.
I just spent the holidays in St. Louis with my family.
Oh, wow. Yeah, my family's, what's left of them that haven't passed away are still there. We're.
Do you get back there much?
You know, when my mother was alive, I went back quite frequently.
Sure.
But since she passed, I haven't been back as much as I want to. I want to go this summer. No mosquitoes in Santa Barbara, where I live.
There are mosquitoes in St. Louis in the summertime. Believe me.
That could be another show, couldn't it?
About the size of hummingbirds. So your book is called Beyond Every After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey to Death and the Afterlife. Tell us about this.
So the book was born of a client of mine who was a friend of, who was the sister of a friend of mine who was also our realtor. And her husband was in a coma following brain surgery, and I know you're going to talk to her, and she can tell you more about that.
Jocelyn.
But Jocelyn, she did not have any faith, and he had been in a coma for 26 days, and her sister kept saying, you know, you should really talk to Catherine. And she was like, no, I'm not going to talk to Catherine. I don't believe in this. And on our first phone session, I actually was on vacation in Washington State, and she was, her husband was in UCLA. On the telephone, he through me, through what I do, was able to tell her that he thought he was dreaming, and she was able to tell him, no, you've been in a coma for 26 days.
Jeez.
And she's a lawyer, he's a lawyer, and I'll let her tell you more about that when you speak to her about what he told her, which made her understand that this was all for real and it was really possible. But basically, George, during that phone call, he roused himself out of his, he began to rouse himself out of his coma.
Was that Kevin?
Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin was her husband, yeah. Mm. And so the book begins there, and she continues to speak to him. He does rouse himself and gets better, but then, of course, he still has the brain cancer, or it returns, and so she was going to bring him home to take care of him, as, you know, so many families do in this case. You know, they knew that he was terminal, and so the day before she was to bring him home, or maybe it was the day of, I woke up and got, like, I call them these God nudges or spirit nudges, and I knew I had to go to UCLA and do an in-person writing, and I did. And during that conversation, he said that he didn't want to go home. He wanted to go to the hospice facility in our area, and they had given him much longer to live when they discharged him. And he died pretty quickly once he arrived there. And at hospice, he said goodbye to his children. He was, again, of course, unconscious, which I know sounds kind of crazy when you say it.
Well, he was doing it through you, right?
Yeah, yeah, yes, absolutely. But and then they had more connection after he died, and an ongoing dialogue. So she got to know, as our readers of our book, Beyond Ever After, learn that, you know, death is not an ending. So,
how are you able to communicate with the deceased or those who are comatose?
Well, for me, I just think, you know, I've been doing it for over 30 years. There's sort of like this energy stream. I don't see anything, but that we're all swimming in this stew. And for whatever reason, I can just put my hand in or my mind or open myself to it, and it's all there. So I'm able to feel the energy of the person, unique characteristics about them. No two people are alike in terms of the deceased people. People in comas usually... like Kevin reported he was dreaming. He thought he was dreaming in his coma, so he wasn't trying to wake himself up. But people report all different kinds of things. And then, of course, with the God writings, that's the majority of what I do. And that is kind of, it has an introduction. It's sort of a soul print, I think, where it's just very metaphorical, very beautiful, but explains things in ways that would make you, you know, you could, I've had a lot of people, I have therapists refer their clients to me, because you can talk about a problem forever and ever, or some kind of struggle that you're having, or a pattern of behavior, or you could just get a very clear image of something, and you would think, well, why would I want to do this? I'm reminded of a session with a client where the description was, you wear your wounds like a crown. You know, that's pretty telling. That's a pretty graphic image.
Sure is,
to
yeah.
get. And people shift, and they're able to let go of these kinds of things. By the way, it is not uncommon that whatever is coming through in the session will show up in their life. So, for example, with this woman, you wear your wounds like a crown. A day or so later, she called me and said, oh, my goodness, I was driving home and from work, and there was a garbage truck in front of me, and it had Crown Disposal on the back of it. So that happens all the time where, you know, we think we're in this very segmented reality, and, you know, there's signs all about us. So.
Do they come to you, or do you go to them? Because if they're in comas, how do they find you?
No, I always say, until this book, it wasn't like I had a shingle out. I just did this by referral only, very quietly. So I always said if someone was able to find me off the grid, then they were sent. I think that that's just arranged by some other, you know, God, spirit, the universe.
A watcher.
You know, whatever you want to call it, you know. But
perhaps Kevin's guardian angel or their guardian
right.
angels.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All of those things.
Are you the conduit for them?
Yes. And it's not like I always tell people, it's not like I have the white phone and I can call and say, can you get Eddie to the phone? You know, I do not initiate this kind of contact. It's not a process. I don't have to do something. I believe just exactly like you're saying, George, is that it just is by some sort of divine appointment. And I think we all have this ability. You know, we've all felt our loved ones come to us, or many of us have had that. You know, I use the example, you smell your grandmother's perfume who's been gone, and you think, you know, that's...
Or her musty house.
Right. Absolutely. You know, so we all have these... Reality, I think, is more porous than what we imagine it to be, you know. And I think that these sorts of connections are grace. They're just... their opportunities for grace. I don't know what exactly makes it happen or why it's this person and not another. I just know in all these many years, I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these kinds of communication facilitations, and it's never not worked.
Well, that's a tremendous gift that you have. Has it ever gotten to the point where it's unnerving for you?
You know,
it's just too much.
No, because there's that other saying, we're never given more than we can handle. No, it's more wondrous because it's, you know, it's very surprising and kind of magical in a non-spooky kind of woo-woo way, you know. So, no, in the beginning, yes, I was completely overwhelmed. It was very intense. As I said, I thought I must be losing my mind. But I knew that I couldn't be eliciting people to collude with me in my delusion. You know, I couldn't get a stranger to confirm something. And now I'm this many years in, and it's just such a natural thing. So, no. It took me a long time to realize that I could set boundaries around it. And since it was a gift, I felt like if I always had to help people, you know, because it was a gift. And I thought I had, seemed to me that it was a very spontaneous process. And I now know and figured out probably a couple years into this gift that no, you know, I can say yes, and I can say this isn't a good time, and, you know, set those kinds of things. But
has it ever been annoying for you, Catherine?
No, because it's kind of interesting, you know, because I don't know what I don't know, so I'm always kind of, where's this going? So no, it hasn't been, surprisingly enough. And I have lots of people say, do you ever use this gift for yourself? Do you ever ask questions for yourself? And I don't, you know, I just feel like I'm always taken care of. And I've had a lot of people, you know, say, well, if I could do this, I'd lock myself in a room and I never come out, you know. But no, you know, I have a normal life, you know, so yeah.
What's a normal life anymore?
Right. What is a normal life? That's the big question. That could be a whole other show. But you know, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, you know, I do this. You know, I'm a prayer chaplain. You know, I
You do it all.
volunteer a lot, you know.
What's the main message from Beyond Ever After?
That death is not an ending, that our loved ones are always with us, that death isn't to be feared, that there is something after this, you know. People are so worried about where do we go? Is my loved one still with me? You know, there's a lot of messages in the book because in the book we have Jocelyn's a complete skeptic. She doesn't believe in any of this. Jocelyn will
Still
be the one.
or them?
Now she does.
Now
Oh
she
no,
does.
now she does. Yeah. And no, but she was at the time this began, and she was losing her husband. And so she'll be the first one. She'll say, I don't speak spiritual, but you know, that we trust our own experiences, that when we have these senses of presences with us, of spirits, of guardian angels, whatever you want to call them in your vernacular, you know, that we don't poo-poo it, or we have a coincidence and we don't say, oh, that was just a coincidence, that we open ourselves to trust our own experience.
There are no
Because what,
coincidences.
right, yeah. There are none.
No.
So,
Things happen for a reason. Fate takes over. Something happens. But I don't believe in coincidences.
and the more that we can widen ourselves to this, like I said, this more fluid, grace-filled way of noticing things, the more magic our life becomes, and not in a, you know, in a hocus-pocus way, but it's just, it allows for comfort and healing and, you know, to lose someone you love, or to be dealing with a problem. Let's not even say it's someone that's connecting with someone who has passed away, but just this spirit that we're always held in this universal love and energy that supports us and, you know, wants good for us, you know. And some days that's hard for people, but the challenges that daily living brings up, you know. So.
In a moment, Jocelyn Montanaro joins us to tell us, of course, what happened to her husband, Kevin, as Catherine has been telling us, and how this contact occurred and how she handled it. And then both of them will join us for phone calls when we come back in a moment. Where can people get your book, Beyond Every After?
It's Beyond Ever After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey Through Death and the Afterlife, and it's available on Amazon, and or we have a website which has a link to where the book's available, which is beyondeverafter.com.
Simple as that. And you will see it Zoom on Amazon in the morning, Catherine.
There you go.
Okay, we're going to come back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next up, Jocelyn Montanaro joins us to talk about what happened to her with her husband who passed on, and that created the contact with Catherine. All that and much more just ahead on Coast to Coast AM. And in a moment, Jocelyn Montanaro joins us as we talk about her situation and how she got to know Catherine Weisenberg. And we'll take calls with both of them next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Jocelyn Montanaro with us has spent most of her life in California, educated on the East Coast and in Europe. She has a bachelor's degree in international studies, a law degree as well. She spent many years as a lawyer working with divorcing couples, criminal defendants, and general litigation. Jocelyn recognizes the responsibility she has in sharing with others this story you're about to hear. Jocelyn, thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your life with Kevin before this tragedy occurred, first of all.
Well, you know, we had one of those marriages that most people don't have. We really loved each other and couldn't honestly get enough of each other. We spent, we worked together, and when we weren't working together, we just wanted to be together all the time. We were just very connected and very happy. And until he got sick, but that relationship continued actually through Catherine, even long after he died.
Once he got sick, how quickly did it happen?
Well, he got, we were actually in Hawaii on a vacation, and he just keeled over with a seizure, and they went to the hospital, did scans. He had this egg-sized tumor in his head, and we flew back to California. We went to UCLA, and they took it out, and then he was okay for about 3.5 years. The thing about brain cancer is it always comes back, and so we knew it was going to come back. And then when it came back, we went to get another surgery to take out what they could, even though we knew he had a year or less left. And after the surgery, in the recovery room, an artery tore in his head, and he had a massive stroke, and it all went downhill from there. And he was in a coma, and my sister had known Catherine for years and had done sessions with her before where she had gotten great comfort and insight. And she kept suggesting to me, you should do they're called writings with Catherine. And I was, you know, poo-pooing it. One, I didn't believe it. And two, if there was a God, I was pretty mad at him for basically, in my mind, killing my husband. So I just wasn't open to it. But when he'd been in a coma for almost a month, I felt like I had nothing left to lose, and I thought I'd give it a go.
My sister died, Jocelyn, from the exact same thing.
It's horrible. Oh, if you've been through it, there's. I don't want to say there's nothing worse, but it's pretty bad.
There's really nothing you can do. You watch the person you care about just wither away.
There's nothing you can do, but you always hope that you can do something. And while I couldn't do anything to save him, although I tried, I was able to speak, talk with him throughout the process, and then afterwards made it not the tragedy, as big of a tragedy as it would have been otherwise.
Now, did Catherine come to you knowing about Kevin because of this communication with him, or did you go to her based on your relationship with your friend?
You know, I didn't. My sister set it up. She kept suggesting it. I kept saying no.
So the sister knew Catherine.
My sister knew Catherine.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And so she sets it up. You're a little skeptical about it. Tell us about
No, I'm not a little skeptical. I am
a lot skeptical.
Yeah, I'm skeptical. Yeah.
Okay. So you're with her. Do you feel, has Kevin passed on at this point?
No, the first writing, he was in a coma at UCLA, and Catherine was actually in another state on vacation with her family, and we did it over the phone. She doesn't need to be present where you are for her gift to come. It's just with her all the time. And so we did it over the phone, and she the way it works is she just starts writing, and there's always a God introduction, which is always very kind of a it's personal to the writing and kind of foretells a bit about what's coming. And then she said, I hear a man's voice. And I said, who is it? Is it Kevin? He goes, well, of course it's me. And I was, you know, like, well, where are you and what's happening? And he said he thought he was dreaming and didn't realize he was in a coma. And then I thought, well, you know, and then he said some things about, like, he mentioned our kids' names and a few other generalities. And I thought, well, you know, Catherine could have heard from my sister what my kids' names were and things
sure,
like that.
Sure.
And so I asked him this test question. I said, you know, what's the last thing you remember? And he said something that was so specific that I knew Catherine couldn't know it. What he shared with me through her was that he said the last thing I remember was going into the surgery and reaching up and taking Linda's hand, that's the name of the surgeon, and saying, thank you for doing this, Linda. And I was on the phone with Catherine at the time, and I literally nearly fell off my chair because after the surgery, the surgeon came out. And you know how when a family member has a surgery, the doctors come out to tell you how it has gone.
It's either one way or another, too.
Yeah, and she said, you know, everything was fine. And she said, but before I get into the details, I have to tell you, your husband is the nicest man. As we're wheeling him in, he reaches up and takes my hand and says, thank you for doing this, Linda. And there was no way that she could possibly know that. And I just knew at that moment that I was communicating with my husband, who'd been in a coma for almost a month.
That's remarkable, isn't it?
It was beyond remarkable. My whole axis of my world just turned at that moment because I didn't really believe that she had this gift. I'm such a, as you said, a lawyer by training, and I wasn't a spiritual person at all, and just thought that people who said they could communicate with people who were dead were not really able to do it, but just kind of feeding off someone's need to feel like they still had a connection with someone who was gone. So, but in that moment, it all shifted.
That's remarkable, indeed. And of course, we heard from Catherine at the last half talking about this gift that she has, and she's had it for a long, long time. And she was even doubtful in the beginning, a long time ago.
That's what she shared with me, yes. I believe it. If I had this kind of gift and I was hearing things, I'd be pretty doubtful, too.
Did Kevin ever get out of the coma?
Yes. In fact, during that first writing, when he said he thought he was dreaming, and I said, you're not dreaming. You've been in this coma for almost a month. And he said, well, if I'm not dreaming, then I'm going to see if I can get myself out of this, essentially. And so he conducted an experiment where he said, I'm going to tap my fingers. And my sister was actually in the room with him. I was on a landline somewhere else. And he said, okay, I'm going to tap my fingers. And I called my sister, and he had reached his hand out and was tapping his fingers on her hand. And then he said, okay, I'm going to stop. And then he said, I'm going to do it again. And he did. And he said, okay, well, now that I know I'm not dreaming, I'm going to see if I can wake myself up from this. And he did. He started to wake up. And it wasn't like, as I always say, you know, he said, you know, woke up the next morning and said, could I have a cup of coffee? I mean, that would have been impossible. He'd had 5 brain surgeries in a month. But he was able to, follow commands from the doctors. A speech therapist came in. He was able to answer questions. And so it was a complete turnaround from where he had been. He started to wake up.
Did you think, because she was able to communicate with him while he was in a coma, that if and when he passed on, that would continue? Did you even think about that?
Well, I did, because my sister and I had several sessions with her where she had spoken with my father, who'd been deceased, and my brother and other family members. And like I said before, I didn't really believe it. But once I'd been speaking with my husband, who'd been in a coma, I thought, well, I mean, I was hoping it wasn't going to come to that. But after he did die, we did continue our conversations through Catherine.
Now, at what point did you take him to hospice?
Well, he started to get better, and then he declined again. And I was going to just take him home. I didn't want him to go to a skilled nursing facility, which is what they were recommending. And they thought he had some months left. And then Catherine called me and said, you know, I'm getting this nudge, as she says, to come down and do another session. And I was like, no, 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 I'm coming home the next day. You don't need to do that. And she said, no, I really feel the need. And she came to UCLA and did another one. And he said, I'm not going to make it. Do not take me home. I want to go to hospice. Don't take me home. This is going to end soon. Take me to hospice. And so I didn't want to because I knew, you know, you go into those places and you only leave, you know, in a body bag. And I didn't want to do that. But I did, because that's what he wanted. And he, in that writing at UCLA, said to me, you know, I'm counting on you to advocate for me when I can't advocate for myself and I don't want to come home. I want to go to hospice. And we went to hospice, and he died within a week.
Ah, okay. So at what point after he died, Jocelyn, did you go back to Catherine, or did she come to you?
I went back to Catherine about a little over a month later, maybe 6 weeks. I just kept thinking about it. What I kept thinking is, is he okay? Is he okay? It's funny, you wonder if they're okay when you're the one who's really not doing okay. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. And so I said, can I try to connect with him? And she said, sure. But she said, I can't guarantee that he's going to show up. I can never say who's going to come. But I went to her house where I had the first one in person. And it was funny because I had thought maybe there was, candles and stuff involved, and there really wasn't. But she did light a candle, which I thought was kind of funny. And he showed up, and we had a conversation about what happened when he died and what he saw and what it was like. And it was amazing. He's fine. He's fine.
Did he know he had died?
Yes, he did. He knew he had died, and at the moment when he died, he had been in a coma and was back in a coma when he died. And after his heart stopped beating and he had taken his last breath, a moment later his eyes flew wide open and he made this like really surprised gasp, like he was looking at something that was just amazingly wonderful. And I knew at that moment that he had seen, where he was going and what was coming. And so it was amazing.
Is he still with you now?
Well, he's not with me, but yes, he is with me. And I feel him all the time, and not only with the communications with through Catherine, but he sends me signs constantly.
Without her presence?
Without her presence, I can't talk to him without her, but I get signs all the time. Like, for example, he always had this thing about squirrels, and so squirrels show up constantly when they never showed up before, or I'm in the car and I'm thinking about him and the next song that comes on the radio is Brown Eyed Girl from Van Morrison, which is the song that always reminded him of me, or a James Taylor song, which Something in the Way She Moves, which is the other song that was kind of our the music together. So people who go before you, they always, if you're open to receiving it, they have signs all the time that they're with you.
It is remarkable how that works, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm sure your listeners, if they think about it, they probably had lots of those, and I think people often dismiss them as coincidences, but I know that they're not. I know that they're just ways that he's telling me that he's still with me.
How has this changed you?
Well, it's been pretty significant. The biggest thing is I don't fear death. I mean, I hope it doesn't hurt in the process.
And you're in no rush to get there.
I'm in no rush to get there, but I'm not worried about it because I know it's, as he says in our book, Beyond Ever After, that, and this is in the writings, that it's death isn't a failure. And I looked at it like that. Like I was, it's something, it's a loss. It's a failure. And he says it's not a failure, and it's a transition, but it's not a failure. So I don't worry about dying, and I don't sweat the small stuff. And also, it's made me be kind of approach life more from my heart and less from my head, because that's not what really guides us all. It really should be the love we have in our hearts that guide our interactions with other people, and before that, just with my personality and also with my profession, I was always very head-based, and I'm much less like that now.
What would you recommend to people, Jocelyn, who have had loved ones who have died, and they're skeptical too?
Well, I would say I was one of you, and that I, if I hadn't had this experience, I would feel I would just, the grief is so overwhelming when it happens. You feel like they're gone and they're just, it's done. But it's not. And even though they're not there with you, they're still there with you. And I know that when I die, I'm going to be with Kevin again. And in the first writing we had after he died, that was the main question I wanted to know. Am I going to see you again? I had this irrational fear that I had, you know, pissed off a God that I didn't really believe in with all my skepticism. But he said, no, we're going to be together again, and it's going to be as if not a minute has passed. And for me, that and the days that are long and when I have a lot of problems that feel insurmountable, you know, raising my children on our own, my youngest had just turned 13 when he died, that it really strengthened me to kind of go through those harder times because I knew there was something else after and that this was just part of the journey, but not the end of the journey.
We're going to come back in a moment with Catherine Weisenberg, and Jocelyn will stay, and we will take phone calls, questions, your stories as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM.